Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rastlan, today we have the return of BFM's very own Richard Bradbury.
Hello.
Great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Folks, you should know who he is. I won't explain what he does. But we have a first-timer here on A Bit of Culture, somebody I've been trying to get for a very long time. He is a hyphenate, which I'll explain in 1 second, Vernon Adrian Emwang.
Hello, good evening, everybody.
You told me how to pronounce that, and I pronounced it wrong, didn't I?
Yes, the first time. A lot of people do. Vernon Adrian Emwang.
Emwang.
Which rhymes with A song.
Okay. He's a hyphenate. He's a theatre practitioner, an educator.
Marketing communications consultant.
Okay. And he does everything. And he's been around forever.
Forever.
And our three topics this week will be: topic number one is...
Not so well dressed.
Not so well dressed. Topic number two is the comments section. And then topic number three will be Serranis. So, Richard.
Yes.
Not so well dressed.
Mm-hmm.
Your hometown is in the news.
Right. My hometown has currently gone viral for all of the wrong reasons. Let me quickly explain what I mean by well dressed or well dressing, right? So, in the area that I grew up, the Peak District in Derbyshire. It's
in England.
In England, it is a beautiful green area, and it's many generations ago. We were hit quite heavily with the Black Death, and there was an awful lot of people wiped out. And during that period, for the people that weren't wiped out, they would kind of celebrate the clean water, so to speak, the clean wells. And what they would do as part of tradition is that they would take flower petals or they would take leaves and they would decorate these wells kind of as a thanks to the pagan gods back then. So that tradition has kind of been carried forward over a few generations. And still today, you have competitions for well-dressing. So people will take quite spectacular images and recreate them using seeds and petals and one thing or another. So they look quite pretty. However, very recently, at my little town has... managed to get itself a little bit of internet infamy by reproducing what they call a tribute to Princess Diana. Made up of petals and leaves and whatever, yet it is the most awful likeness of Princess Diana that I have ever seen. And it will actually lead very nicely onto your comments section thing a little bit later on, because some of the comments that are appearing on the Facebook page for this thing are quite horrendous. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because if you remember a few years ago, in I think it was 2013, there was an 83-year-old woman who tried to repaint a fresco in a Spanish town, and she did an awful job of it. And it looks quite horrendous. It looks quite terrible.
It's a famous image.
It's a famous, terrible image.
You can Google it easily.
Right. And then a few years later, in fact, I think it was earlier this year, we saw the sculpture of Ronaldo that came out. And again, that was nothing like his likeness.
So bad.
Again, it kind of spawned a whole bunch of viral images. Now, the woman in Spain, what she actually did, apart from the fact that she made her little town and village internet famous, she created quite a bit of a storm, and people would end up going to this village, and it really boosted tourism. 150,000 extra tourists per year were coming to visit this small town simply to look at this really bad image of Jesus on this fresco. And it kind of got me wondering, well, what would happen to my small little town? I mean, it's a town of 100,000 people. The only thing that we have ever been famous for is that we have a crooked spire. Vernon, I know you've
seen it. Yes, I've been there.
It.
I've seen the crooked spire.
Right. We have a market that has been running since the 1200s. And we got into the semi-finals of the FA Cup back in 1997 against Middlesbrough after a replay. It was 3-3 at Old Trafford. We brought it back to Chesterfield, and we should have won. The referee declared it as a non-goal. In fact, on video evidence later on, it was proven to be a goal, and Chesterfield would have been in the FA Cup final. Rant over. But, you know, and that's kind of when I lost my interest in football, Cam, should you know.
Right,
anyway,
right.
But it really got me thinking, you know, Chesterfield hasn't been the center of art and culture ever. now it's under.
But
this
when did you become the arbitrator of
right?
You know, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is kind of brings me onto my next point: is that the council who have kind of pushed this this thing forward are saying, you know, art is meant to be discussed, it's meant to be critiqued.
Absolutely right.
Right, and I completely agree with that. Yet, if you were to see this image yourself, perhaps, Vernon, you might be like, you could recognize it as an image of someone, but if you didn't know who it was, you know, obviously, you'd be like looking at it going, this thing, look, it's quite scary. It looks like something from a recent horror film.
But if it was good,
yeah,
then nobody would be talking about it.
Right.
No one would know.
Exactly.
And, you know, it shouldn't be a photographic image of Princess Diana.
Right.
What's the point then?
Right.
So it's her interpretation or her, the way she wants to express what Princess Diana meant to her.
14 people over 140 hours it took to create this image.
Oh really?
Yeah.
And that is work.
And not one time somebody just took one step back and went, hang on a minute, I'm not entirely sure this represents what it's supposed to be.
They had no idea they were building this for a global audience.
No, they
you
did
know,
not.
They just for the people of Chesterfield, they thought.
Yeah.
And you people, you're not very discerning in Chesterfield. You'll take anything.
I think it's really unfair
for you to say that it's ugly.
It is ugly, Vernon.
Because it's art. There's no such thing as ugly art. Well, to you, it might be ugly, but to other people, it might
okay.
not be ugly.
And beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right?
And yeah. Richard, aren't you a bit proud that Chesterfield's in there? When you saw it on your news feed, you're thinking, whoa, Chesterfield.
But proud for all of the wrong reasons, right?
No, but it's not because they
what wrong reasons?
Yeah, they didn't burn a witch at the stake.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just...
They may have done in the past. I wouldn't put it past them.
But they haven't done it recently. and you know, it's for a flower arrangement.
No, I mean, to be fair, it is a bit of fun, and it is nice, you know, to see my hometown in now the global news network, as it were.
I mean, yeah, and I can say I've been there.
And you can say you've been
there. Yeah, Vernon is Chesterfield's so far only tourist, but you may
ambassador have more. Ambassador
at large. Yes.
I mean, but genuinely, I honestly think that we will now, I think the council will have to, originally they were going to destroy this thing.
They were really thinking of destroying
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I think there will be now pilgrimages, perhaps, to see this thing?
You know, I for some reason, it comes into my head, there's this little sculpture in Brussels. It's very famous. It's called the Mannequin Piss. It's a little boy, and very, very young, like, toddler almost, and his statue is attached to a water pipe so that he's peeing, like, all the time. And I'm sure that when that was first put up, the people thought, this is horrible.
Right.
It's so tacky. And yet, it is now, after, I don't know, 200 years, it's the kind of tourist icon for Brussels. People, when they go to Brussels, if they ever go to Brussels, which you should do, it's a great town, will look at this thing.
Well, you see, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, somebody builds something, everybody thinks it's ugly, and before you know it, it becomes iconic, like the Sydney Opera House.
Or a crooked spire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are PR people and advertising people around the world who are killing each other, trying to create
these kinds of viral, whatchamacallit.
Yeah, these people in Chesterfield created by accident. You cannot create magic. You should be pleased.
You should quickly go design T-shirts.
Do you know what? I that's not a bad idea, actually.
Coloring books.
You can now just say on the radio, I'm from Chesterfield. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh.
And immediately people...
Right.
I'd wear a T-shirt that says, I've been there.
Right. So we in this room are full of nothing but praise for your sculpture in your beloved town of Chesterfield, which I think leads us on nicely, though, to topic number two, which is the comments section, because not everybody has been so happy to see this. And you were telling me that in the comments section of the website in Chesterfield, there's been nothing but rage and anger.
Yeah. Disgust and disbelief, I think.
Right.
Is, yeah.
Negativity, basically.
Very much so.
Because, you know, I like to watch my YouTube clips. And on occasion, I have made the mistake of scrolling on down into the comments
section. On occasion, I always do that.
Do you?
I'd like to know what other people are thinking.
Yeah, but it turns out to be such anger and rage. I was watching this one clip of cute animals doing cute things. I mean, like cats kind of like bopping dogs on the noses with their paws. I love that kind of thing. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to...
Yeah, you look like that kind of a guy.
Yeah. So I scroll down, and then just anger and rage and the kind of abuse, which I just simply cannot say on the radio.
Oh, completely unrelated to the video?
No, actually, it was, you know, if you find that funny, that particular clip funny, then you must be a whatever.
A beep, beep, beep.
Yeah. And
how did you, what was your response? Did you kind of like fight back?
No. I did not get involved. Okay. Of course not.
Well, I mean, because how it goes, isn't it?
But that person who made that comment is insane, and I don't want to get involved with insanity, surely, Vernon. I mean, two people getting engaged with it?
By you kind of like getting worked up and feeling it's a good subject for a radio show like this.
No, but
it's kind of like engagement in a way, isn't
no,
it?
No, not at all. It didn't
passive aggressive engagement.
No,
passive aggressive.
It didn't happen on the internet, therefore it didn't actually exist. That's how it works, isn't it? So I think we can all agree that there is a lot of rage and anger and abuse on the internet. Where does it come from, and what are the possible consequences? Because if I could just add one last thing, that I read one piece about young people who are growing up with the internet. Unlike people our age, we had a time before.
I'm pretty young.
Okay, Vernon. And but people who have grown up with nothing but the internet are finding themselves afraid to say anything on the net because of the abuse that will be poured upon them by people who we don't know, they don't know, from around the world. And I think that maybe the internet will become a desert as regards a space for discussion.
Okay, Cam. I mean, it's widely known that YouTube comments are horrendous, always have been, from day dot, for whatever reason. It would always be anger in there. It would always be completely useless stuff. Very little of anything meaty or of substance. And then I think I mentioned to you outside, there's a brief period when there was this transition from when Google took over YouTube, and they enforced the rule that for a while you had to use your real name, as it were, for when you wanted to log in and leave comments. And for a while there was this period of almost peace in the YouTube comments. It was nice. It was, you know, people were getting along because that the element of anonymity had been taken away. Do you think that maybe the very fact that these people are allowed to be anonymous just lets them vent out?
I would say so, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm not quite sure why they then want to vent out. I mean, Vernon, you've had experience.
Yes. In fact, just before coming into this office, I was checking this website that I run, this community that I run, called Serani Sembang, on Facebook. And I was quite shocked to see somebody vent quite aggressively. It was said that the person is a highly respected member of the community, and I was trying to figure out exactly why do people get so aggressive online when all they should be doing is maybe picking up the phone and calling the other person and saying, can we discuss this?
So why do you think that person
maybe it's too easy, it's too convenient to, you know, get on there and just let your emotions burst forth and express yourself.
But are these real emotions? I mean, are they not contrived
more
emotions?
More real than what you get face to face. I feel that you are there on your keyboard and you're typing away, and whatever's coming into your head and however you're feeling, it's going to come through your fingers into the keyboard and boom, out onto the world.
But there are people out there who actively go out to troll,
yes,
to get you to react to these kinds. You know, people make accounts specifically to do that, and I think that a lot of them are kind of what you're seeing in the YouTube comments. It's just people who are just there to piss you off on purpose.
Yeah, or indeed the opposite. You know, the Russian troll industry, there's a big thing. It's not fake.
Russian troll industry.
Yeah. State-sponsored trolling.
Okay.
Who make it their business?
We have that here too, you know.
Yes, that's right. One of the key things they do is to quash. They want to quash any debate. So when somebody says something and they disagree with it, they will be hit by multiple people who will just shout them down.
Yeah.
And it can be very threatening language. And the anonymity kicks in. It's like, do these people know me? Do they live close to me? I don't know. So, you know, regular people then retreat from the internet and don't say anything anymore.
I guess there will come a time when we will kind of evolve in our social habits and realize that perhaps maybe keeping quiet isn't the right thing to do, that maybe saying something, fighting back, expressing yourself might go some ways to actually galvanize others to your support. And that's how these kinds of things work, I think.
Yeah, and I think what you say is very lovely, Vernon, but I wonder about one thing. You know, I'm a writer. I write for a living. I do a lot of it. And whenever I'm writing, I'm always thinking, am I being understood? Does this make sense? And I can never really be sure. So when you write on the internet, people who are not, you know, full-time professional writers, who maybe not even the...
Yeah. I think I know where you're going with that. Because sometimes I write stuff and I go, no, that's not the way I wish to be perceived. So right. I will revise it.
And not everybody has that time.
Correct. Yes.
And a lot of people think that they're being understood.
Yes.
A lot of what comes out can be gibberish.
That is why it is important for somebody who's being, let's say, attacked, to restate their stand, perhaps in another way. Because I've noticed in monitoring virtual companies that, you know, we only have words on the screen. Mm. Whereas in a face-to-face confrontation, you know, there is body language, there is how my eyes will crinkle, how my lips may purse, blah, blah, blah. You see that. And as communication experts know, you know, what you hear and what you see, you know, in terms of hearing the tone rather than just words, can add tremendously to how you will react to something being thrown at you, you know, face-to-face or on the screen.
But I think, though, that the one thing that really works, which works every time, which anybody in the laziest writer will succeed with, is being emphatic. When you are absolutely, this thing is crap, you are stupid, and the whole world hates you, is very easy to write.
Yeah.
Whereas any kind of subtlety, the kind of subtleties you're talking about, Vernon, take a bit of time and effort. And you can be very clearly understood when you are angry. And you write in full caps.
You can be very clearly understood in terms of not your context, but how you're feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And right. that's enough for some people.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. You know, I don't think people necessarily care about the context. They just want that to spit that anger out.
Yeah.
Well, that's good for the person who wants to vent and needs to vent for some reason. We don't know. You know, we don't know the back story. But for the receiver, I think it's good for the receiver to always take a step back to try and figure out, okay, where is this really coming from?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And if you do that, then the trolls won't bug you.
And also, if you do that, you can get involved in funding the psychoanalyst industry for a lifetime.
Very good. Because this is how I have approached my virtual presence on the internet.
Right.
I'm pretty much, you know, quite vocal about who I tackle with and what I think about, you know, people saying things.
All right. But for now, Vernon, enough. Yep. Stop. All caps. exclamation mark. Because we need to take a break. But we're back here in a moment. We'll be talking about Serranis here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Raslan, Richard Bradbury, and Vernon Adrian Emong.
Very good.
I got it right.
Yep.
So, Vernon, Serranis, yes, what is, I mean, people in this country should know, but what is or are Serranis?
Actually, not everybody knows.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I am a Serrani. And it's a Malay word, and it is a word used to label a particular race or community of people, which is people of my ilk, Serrani, or Eurasians. The community goes back to the time when the first European travelers came this way and started to have children of mixed race. And the name Serrani has been used on my community, both mother and father. And in fact, in certain enclaves in Malacca, Singapore, and Penang, there were places called Kampung Serrani. Serrani is a word that I identify with for my so-called race. And I run a website called SerraniSembang.org, which started out as a genealogical ancestry kind of like, you know, website, family trees and stuff.
So in the Serrani community, I feel like I'm really walking on an eggshell.
I can feel that. I can feel that. It's so good.
That's because...
Anyway, I ask the questions around here. So, genealogy and lineage,
yes,
is one, an important thing, I'm guessing, but also two, something which actually can be followed. I mean, if I go, say, to my Malay family, it becomes incredibly hard.
Yes.
To go back beyond three generations.
Okay, the website started like 15 years ago because people of my ilk, Eurasians, stroke Serrani people, were interested in finding out about their ancestors. And it was easier with a European site to your family because usually you'd be, I mean, like most Serrani Eurasian people are Christians. And because of that, there'd be church records. And those church records go back centuries. So I can trace my ancestry back to the Vikings in Norway simply because of church. Yeah, I'm a Viking. You should see the way I eat my meat. Yeah, and
when you eat your devil curry.
Yeah, and because of that, you know, church records, you can, and because writing, etc., was part of Western civilization, you can trace quite far back. Unfortunately, the matrilineal site, because of the Asian aspect, difficult. Very difficult. Yeah.
Richard, do you know your family going back?
Yeah. My mother's side are from Ireland, two or three generations back. And on my father's side, a couple of generations, it's Italians.
Right, so, but you're English.
But I'm English by geography only.
Right, so you haven't carried down this sense of, oh, I'm Irish or I'm Italian or I'm a
no.
whatever an English kind
no,
of word.
No, not particularly, no. I don't know. I mean, I assume, Vernon, you have a big sense of pride about, you know, your Sorani heritage as well, right?
Pride is, I'm not sure whether that's the right word to describe it.
Yeah, what is the right word?
But for me, it's like fascination.
Fascination, okay.
Yeah.
See, I don't have that. You know, I'm English, that's it. I'm okay with that.
But you're not having a greater society perhaps imposing an identity upon you to distinguish you from the majority, from others.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Vernon, I mean, do you feel that you are Sorani because you cannot be something else, if that makes sense to you? I mean,
what's wrong with
just being Malaysian?
It's not as interesting. I mean, like, yeah, you can be Malaysian.
Yeah.
But so is everybody. But if you can find something that perhaps maybe makes you a little different, you're quite excited to figure out where does this lead you. I mean, like, I started up the website not because I was interested in ancestry or genealogy. I started it because I happened to be part of a group that was interested in genealogy and ancestry and then needed to get online and on a website that could connect people together. And I was more interested in computer-mediated communications. So I had the knowledge on how to create a website, and then it just exploded from there. And then for me, the interest, the fascination started to happen when people begin talking about the stories of their fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers and mothers and blah, blah, blah. You know? And those stories fascinated me because I swing that way. Yeah. And eventually, I began to look at this word Sorani, and in the conversations, I could see how the word Sorani itself was highly contested.
Uh-huh.
You know? Sorani is a truncation, they believe, is a truncation of Nazrani. Nazrani is a form of saying Nazarene, and Nazarene comes from Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah.
So in Indonesia, right, people of my ilk, the Eurasians, you know, are known as Indo or Indos. The Christians are known as Nazrani. But here, in this part of the world, Southeast Asia, Singapore, Malaysia, a bit of Thailand, blah, 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 Sorani is actually the label given to people of my ilk. And most Eurasians here, not most, but there are some Eurasians who take to the label and are very proud of it, and some who don't.
That's what I was going to ask. You were saying that there was somebody from Singapore who...
Well, there were Singaporeans who did not want to use the word. You know, but I also suspect from having witnessed conversations that even Malaysian Sorani people of Sorani heritage also would rather not use the word.
What would they rather use then?
They would prefer Eurasian.
You know,
they would prefer Portuguese Eurasian. But I keep saying to them that the word Eurasian actually started with the British being here. Before that, we were known as Sorani.
Right.
So, you know...
But can I ask, Vernon, my mother's Welsh.
Yes.
My father, Malay.
Yes.
Am I Sorani?
From my definition, you are first generation Sorani. You are Eurasian. You are first generation Eurasian. But because you were born in this... Were you born here?
Yeah.
If you're born here in this part of the world, from European, Asian ancestry, then in my definition, you are Sorani.
Ha!
So well, Sorani is specific
I've been
to location. I will claim you. I need to make the numbers so we can start a political party.
Okay. And does this not mean then that I'm very good at music? I can sing very well. And
don't you?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Suddenly I do.
I don't think we need an example of that, though, do we? Not right now.
All right. Let's. I mean, you are a self-identifying Sorani, and you are fascinated, if not proud, by that association. So. What do you think are the attributes or the responsibilities of your community?
Okay, I feel that, yeah, there is a particular position that we can hold in the social milieu of Malaysia. And that is basically to be bridges of cultural understanding. You know, because we are so mixed and we should use our hybridity to perhaps understand other kinds of races better and then be able to help different people connect with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very idealized...
Well, he just said he wants to start a political party. Yeah, well, of course it's going to be idealized.
Well, okay. I mean, that's... Do your fellow comrades in arms, your cousins, etc., agree with you on this? It's like, well, no, we just want to just do whatever.
Yeah, well, I haven't kind of like, you know, made any announcements or written any manifestos. But when I do, I'll let you know. And I'll let right. you know what...
What are the downsides? What are the downsides of being Sarani in this country?
People look at you and go, what's that? You know, and then you say, oh, I've been here. And if you look at me, I look either Malay or, you know, Malay people think I'm Chinese. Chinese people think I'm Malay. Most people think I'm Sarawakian or Sabahan. And then the name, Among, which is also kind of like a little bit of a strange name. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like a Sequeira or Gomez or Santa Maria, those kinds of, you know, European type names. Mm. So for me, my problem is that my challenge is that being Sarani is perhaps more accurate than saying I'm Eurasian.
When you're filling in the forms here, are you Chinese, Indian, Malay?
I'm an other.
You're an other.
Yes, a line.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's okay. The real other, though.
That's why I'm a hyphenate.
Yeah. Okay, so can I ask then, have you ever been made to feel... I can't think of another word. Unwelcome, but I mean, has anybody been... Very cruel and rude.
Well, it doesn't happen often, but I've had it happen here as well as overseas. So it's no different, no big deal, you know. I've always felt to be an outsider. Like when I go to Australia, for instance, or any English-speaking country in the West, and I'm standing at a bus stop, I feel really strange, not because I'm different, but because I can eavesdrop on what everybody's talking about.
Oh, you're like sixth sense.
No, it's like here in Malaysia, if people speak, they will speak a language that I don't understand.
Right, okay. You know?
So I can't get involved, I can't eavesdrop in all those conversations. And
Fair enough. Yeah. But at the end of the day, apparently, according to Vernon, we are all Sarani. I mean, you, Richard, you're a sort of Italian-Irish Sarani. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We'll claim you too.
But is there, I think I've heard somebody, it may have been in a comedy show, somebody once describing somebody as pure Sarani.
Yeah, okay.
All right,
yeah.
Have you ever heard...
Yes.
I mean, do people, family members, do they ever turn their noses up at people and go, well, you know, we are pure Sarani?
No, usually it'll be the word Eurasian.
Yeah?
We are real Eurasians, which is, yeah.
Right.
Sarani by itself is actually quite inclusive.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, well, you've included me.
Yeah. So. We're very inclusive. We welcome anybody just to make up our numbers so we can have this political party to change.
So if you are interested and if you are of that community, or you suspect you are, but you've never dared say, go check out Vernon's website, presumably, which is called again?
SaraniSembang.org.
And what happens when you go there?
We have a lot of, like, almost 5,000 photographs and maybe 12,000 conversations over the last 15 years. The diaspora of Sarani people all over the world.
All right, and you have to prove your credentials then. You've got to have like a DNA test or something.
Well, we need to know who you are because we don't want you nicking our photographs and saying to you.
Oh, right, yes. There's always some reason, isn't there?
Well, we're also on Facebook, so you can look for Sarani Sembang on Facebook.
And I thought I knew everything about, you know, the Eurasian / Sarani community, but apparently not. So can I say Eurasian or am I being... No? Is that word being taken off my list now?
Well, depends. I mean, like if you want to refer to people of mixed... European Asian ancestry, you say Eurasian. If you want to refer to people of mixed European Asian ancestry from this part of the world, then you should say Sarani.
Right, and also going back forever.
Yeah,
to the Vikings.
To the Vikings. Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. Now that brings us to the final part of the show, where we have recommendations. Recommend something that we think might be of interest. And Richard's going first.
Yeah, it's an essay from 1984. Is it okay to be a Luddite? By a guy called Thomas Pynchon. It was first published in the New York
Thomas
Times.
Pynchon.
Yeah, it's as relevant now as it was when it was published back in 1984. He alludes to self-driving cars, AI taking over the world, and a point where we will be carrying around a phone that does everything for us. It's a very interesting read from 1984.
Never happened. It'll never happen. By the way, a guy called Thomas Pynchon's a bit like saying, I don't know, a guy.
Yeah, I know. When he said that, I mean, like
a guy called Charles Dickens or something.
That's right. Yeah.
By the way, a Luddite is the name that was given to historically a group of people in England.
Yes.
From your neck of the woods.
Correct.
Who went around smashing up bits of machinery in the cotton, in the textile industry.
If you read the essay, there's an actual better definition than that.
Right. Well,
would you like a little piece of it?
Well, just quickly, though.
Okay, very quickly. Ned Ludd is the guy who is referred to as supposedly the King Luddite, who went and, in a fit of rage, apparently, broke two stocking knitting machines. And sometime, I think it was 1757, he's supposed to have done that.
In Arnold, Derbyshire.
Yes, in Arnold, Derbyshire, where it is said these newfangled machines were causing problems. In fact, these newfangled machines were actually invented 200 years earlier by a reverend who had invented this machine because the girl he was paying attention to said, I can no longer come out and visit you because I have to knit stockings. So he invented a stocking knitting machine.
Ah, it's always great that, you know, horniness leads to great technological leaps. Magnificent. But Luddite now means people
it
who
does, yeah.
Refuse to accept and denounce all new modern technology.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Me, basically. Okay, so it's the name of the essay again?
Is it okay to be a Luddite?
By a guy called Thomas Pynchon.
That's the one. Yeah.
Right. And so my recommendation is, now kids, ask your grandparents, and they might remember, about a thing called Astro, which in their day, people used to sit around and watch on a thing called a television, TV shows and movies, and you had no idea what was going to happen, and you'd have to wait for them. So I am one of these old-fashioned people, a Luddite, and I still have a thing which is called a decoder, and I watched a thing called Astro, and they've recently introduced a channel called TVN on their movie thing, and it's just Korean movies.
I cannot believe this is your recommendation. Honestly, I'm struggling with this.
And it's really great. I've been watching lots of Korean films.
Oh, you should see his face the way he's lighting up while he's talking about
it. It's fascinating.
I'm just wondering what Lynn would say if she was sat in this chair right now.
Well, there's a reason why.
That she's not here? Right.
No, it's very exciting for me because, you know, when I'm watching these Korean movies, which are very well subtitled, I'm being introduced to brand new genres. So when you're used to watching just the Western American model, the Hollywood model, you get so used to the genres and the genre conventions that you just predict what the hell's going to happen next. But with these ones, it's like, I don't know what this genre is, but then there are themes as you watch more of them. The themes which are cropping up again, like, oh, that was in that other movie. So it's just a fascinating way to sort of like just see how another culture creates movies. And technically, they are excellent. I mean, they're so well made. So there's no worries there.
TVN, was it?
TVN. TVN Network. But I don't see why the N would be should be redundant. So uh-huh. It should be TV Network.
Anything on, like, YouTube? Because I don't have Astro.
I'm sorry, Vern. I just can't help you. Because I don't do the internet. I'm a Luddite. And as far as I'm concerned...
Then how are you reading the comment section?
Box, top box, or whatever you call it.
Anyway, decoder, you know, enough of that. Okay, enough of that.
Decoder.
Yes, decoder. So that's my one. TVN top on
box.
Astro. So
set top box. STB, right?
Set top box.
So, Vernon, what's your recommendation?
My recommendation, in the spirit of the Sarani word that I brought to this table, is a video on available on YouTube, so you won't be able to watch it because you're a Luddite. It's called Understanding Race.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Understanding Race. It's by the Learning Channel, uh-huh. TLC, originally National Geographic, I think. And it's a really good documentary about the fact that race is actually a figment of our imagination.
Okay. Just a construct, but you're
just a construct.
But you're still nonetheless buying into it.
I'm buying into the ethnicity, the cultures, traditions, the way people kind of like, you know, lived, the stories. I'm buying into it because of that more than anything else. I reinforce the idea with my website. I do, but it's like one of those situations where, in order to deal with its bad side, you need to, you know, understand it and grapple with it.
Right, because you're of a community that's one of the few in Malaysia that is not entitled to be able to call itself a race. I mean, if you're Chinese, you're Malay, you're Indian, you can call yourself.
Yeah, we're not the CMI, we're the O, other. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not a big deal. I mean, I think it'll only be kind of like it would hurt your ego that you can't be either CM or I. And you're just the number four, you know. Mm. But it's interesting too, like coming up in November at the Singapore Literary Fest, there is a writer called Melissa De Silva who's launching a book called other is not a race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So they have it. So that's understanding race, is it?
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this week's show, and it only remains me now to thank Richard Bradbury.
Thank you.
Thank you. And special honored guest, Vernon Among. Vernon Adrian Among.
Thank you. Vernon Adrian Among is the right name, yeah.
I don't think we have three named people very often. And myself, Cam Rustland. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so on our Facebook page, where every like gets a, I can't think of anything, a devil curry.
A devil curry.
a magnificent devil curry recipe. And... we're across the intertubes. Richard, you're
a... I'm on Twitter at Mr. Rich.
Uh-huh. And Vernon, you're like...
I'm everywhere as Vernon A.E.
Uh-huh. I see you all the time on...
Yeah, I'm kind of like everywhere.
And also, of course, your Facebook page and your...
Twitter.
Yeah, and your website, if you can pass the race test. Yeah.
SaraniSimbang.org. That's okay. The website. Yeah.
And so, that brings us to the end. And so please join us next week for another exciting episode of Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold-cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.